and welcome to the Hear It podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Roberts, and I'll be speaking with guests about the campaigns, insights and ideas to better engage youth audiences. I really hope you like it. This episode, we welcome Jim Tudor, founder of the Future Index, a trends consultancy specialising in higher education marketing. And he's also founder and strategic director of Waterfall, a creative agency in Manchester. Having spent over a decade as a board director at Havas, he's run a number of agencies working across the globe in the higher education space. Jim, thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
So no one could have quite predicted the chaotic time that the pandemic gave us for students in particular and higher ed more broadly. So how has Future Index, have you managed to keep a look at what comes next when the present is so hectic?
I guess the main thing is what we try and do is overcome the hectic bit. You know, I think it generally is quite hectic anyway. And I think there are some things that are probably made more hectic by the pandemic. And there are some things that would have been pretty hectic anyway. So I guess the key thing we do is not to get too kind of immersed in that. And we just try and stand back. I think some of the big issues out there, also things that we're amplifying, you know, regardless of the pandemic, that we're amplifying for a good reason. So things like climate, the climate emergency, I think stuff around equality, social justice. These are things that in the last few years that we're taking much more kind of interest in and trying to do stuff about it. So overall, yes, it is hectic. I think hectic's fairly normal for a lot of us. And I suppose what we try and do is stand back and then just look at things and try and come at them from different angles and try and find the spaces where, you know, things aren't quite so kind of mad and hectic and tough and actually where they're quite inspiring. So I guess if you want an example of that, we talk with universities an awful lot about, you know, how they're going to promote themselves to students in the future. And universities are, you know, generally pretty good at kind of getting the basics of that right. What we do, though, is we stand back and we think, well, there's an awful lot of kind of talk about crisis at the moment. Think about the impact on younger people in particular and just try and inspire them more. So I spend a lot of time at the moment talking with universities about the importance of inspiration and talking to younger people about the opportunities, the optimism, the stuff that isn't so hectic. The fact is that we do need different jobs in the future, that there are big skills gaps still. We do have to solve big problems. You know, that actually there's a whole kind of life of opportunities ahead. And I think it's kind of talking in that kind of way and looking at, you know, the potential. And talking to universities about showcasing how they're bringing different subject areas together and preparing, you know, for a more interdisciplinary world, all that kind of stuff is, I think it's quite inspiring. So it's kind of putting a layer over that hectic bit ultimately and enjoying that kind of slightly more optimistic future. And that's partly me as well. I'm, you know, quite an optimistic person, I guess.
I think with young people as well, there is that assumption that it is tough for them, but they're, you can never really underestimate that optimism and sort of fresh eyes on like opportunities as well. So I think that if you can play to that, it does help them just as much as it helped the university kind of have a fresh perspective.
Yeah, I think also that there's been a tendency, I think driven more by politics than anything, to pick on buzzwords and buzz statements. And obviously through the pandemic, we had the word crisis, but crisis has now morphed into most things, you know, and it's the word crisis we keep seeing. So I know the cost of living crisis is really tough. But we keep hearing this word crisis. We've obviously got war. That's very, very tough. But suddenly the news is very much kind of overwhelmed by this sense of crisis. And that's a knock-on effect with people. And we need to respect that, stand back and think, well, this isn't really fair. You know, let's look for some of the more optimistic things.
I mean, I guess with the pandemic as well, it forced many institutions who perhaps were still quite behind on the, you know, the creativity of like, dare we say, a virtual open day versus what they've always done. What kind of innovations or changes that the pandemic forced or kind of created do you think are here to stay, even down to the expectations of students to be able to get that content virtually as well as in person?
Well, first of all, on that, I would say that I think working in the sector, working with a lot of universities, I was really impressed actually with the people in the university, especially the types of people I've been working with and how they mobilise themselves, how they weren't furloughed, you know, they were full on working kind of 24/7 to really change stuff and to do things like virtual open days, all that kind of thing. I was really impressed. I think the people in the sector have done an incredible job. Having said that, though, I do think that some of the stuff that we were kind of forced into more or accelerated more, such as doing virtual open days, doing a supposedly hybrid kind of classroom, Zoom classrooms, Teams, all that kind of stuff, I think that is obviously here to stay. I mean, there's a huge benefit to getting that right. I just think that there's an awful lot that are getting it wrong, ultimately. You know, and I've seen it with my own eyes. You know, I've seen some of the classrooms that are going on now online, and they're not flipped classrooms, really. You know, they're just kind of the same thing as lectures, just kind of, you know, on mass kind of virtual classrooms. And I think universities, you know, and respecting that they need the time and the investment to do this, ultimately need to try and shift more to that true kind of hybrid model, where I think online can be a brilliant accompaniment to the stuff that you do in the classroom, you know, the more practical stuff, where you're bringing things to life and challenging things and talking about it. So I kind of, you know, like I said, I do really respect what universities have done as a sector. I think it was incredible during the pandemic how they had to change. But now stepping back, we can't have the normal being some of the types of virtual teaching that we have. You know, we need to kind of change the gears and do it a bit differently.
As a sector, do you think higher education is improving when it comes to change? Some aspects of it, certainly quite a few institutions seem to be quite reluctant or struggle with sort of offering something different.
Yeah, I think, you know, apart from, you know, just the lockdown itself, higher education is actually being hit by a whole kind of myriad of forces, really, you know, and it's a tough job to change, you know, when you've got new providers of education that are really upping their game. You know, we've seen the likes during the lockdown of, you know, Greenpeace and National Geographic and even Adidas that, you know, do some really interesting stuff that, you know, is in some way shaking up the education world. Also, the lockdown kind of introduced the whole, you know, problems, not introduced, but, you know, I guess created greater awareness about things such as accessibility, the fact that not everyone has access to a laptop, you know, the affordability of being able to do things in a virtual way. And of course, then the whole mental health challenge, which, you know, we had a mental health challenge before the lockdown, but at least we, you know, we've now created greater awareness of it. And the fact is, universities have to deal with all of these things. And because we've got greater awareness of it and more demands to do something, then it becomes a bigger change, I think, ultimately. It is a challenge. And I think it is one that ultimately they do have to embrace. I would be reluctant to say universities aren't going to change, because I think there are many times where we see how quickly they can mobilise, maybe when they're forced to more, such as in a lockdown. I think when it comes to ongoing change that's needed, I think the problem, you know, there is a problem with structure and complexity. I think leadership, I think there is a kind of a perception that universities are a bit like oil tankers, or certainly the bigger ones, and it's very difficult to turn them around. But I do stress that's, I think, a perception. I think it can be done. And I think there are things that universities have and do that become quite enormous when it comes to change for them. Things, simple things we might think, like timetabling and stuff. You know, I think many universities look at it and go, well, we should really change, but that's huge to try and do that. I think when there's a kind of the forces are really on, I think universities can do it. But I think there's a lot of things that in structure and leadership, that type of thing, that ultimately will need to change.
So tell us a little bit more about Future Index and how you've sort of become the sector go-to when it comes to ideas, both within and outside the higher ed.
Future Index is a trends consultancy operating in the higher education space. We specialise in marketing trends, and it's across the full spectrum of marketing. So it is from the product itself, the portfolios, the brand, right through to the promotion of courses, the research storytelling, the use of social media. And we focus on the trends. We look at where markets are heading. We look at what employers are demanding. We look at what students want. And we then help our university clients really to kind of cut through some of that and see how they can, you know, operate successfully in that space. The other thing Future Index does, though, it doesn't just look at the kind of university market as a whole globally and, you know, who's doing what. It also looks outside the sector. So we spend a lot of time looking at the likes of, you know, quite progressive marketeers and brands from Adidas and Patagonia and places. And we share that with our university clients to inspire them. You know, you can't just learn from your peers. You need to be kind of looking wider than that. So we kind of operate very much in terms of a global space when it comes to trends, both geographically and with regards to the sectors that we look at.
Having attended some of your events, I know they're always full of ideas and you come away sort of your mind buzzing. And I think even just on a basic level with teams, even just seeing and talking about other ideas can help. But I guess even for those outside of HE, how do you think you can take kind of some of those creative ideas and trends, for want of a better word, and things going on with Gen Z more broadly, and then apply them to your own campaigns and build that in? Like, what's the connect there? Because sometimes, and you'll have heard this 1,000 times, when people go, well, I don't have that budget, and it's just like it kills the conversation. It's, how would you recommend people going, there's all these things going on, how do I apply it?
Yeah, I guess first of all is to anticipate how people are feeling about this. You know, I did a session the other day, like a part of an away day, and I opened up really by anticipating how, I think about 80 marketers in the room, anticipate how I thought they might be feeling. You know, acknowledge the fact that they're probably thinking what I'll show them they can't afford. You know, it's going to be budget, too many kind of blockers to it. Or I'm going to show them stuff that, you know, Adidas are doing, and they think, well, that's Adidas. And so in my introductions, I kind of just try and fix that little bit first. So a lot of the great ideas out there don't need huge budgets. You know, even if a lot is spent on it, you can kind of take an idea and you can look for the more affordable version. But, you know, the fact is, as we know, that there's a lot of content being driven by creators, you know, and it's been driven by your own students and by academics and people that very much, you know, can deliver kind of, I guess, in a more affordable kind of way. I think many of the best ideas out there don't have to cost lots of money. And also, I do share examples of university work with my audiences and with our clients that really are quite brilliant. You know, they're examples I've shown in the past that have won global advertising awards, such as Clio Awards, you know, beating all the big consumer brands for simple, affordable ideas. So I guess the key thing really is to help people overcome some of those kind of almost mental barriers that we'll have. The other thing that's really, really important, I think, is to remember what we're doing, you know, and what we're actually working with here. We're very, very lucky, I think, in the university world to be talking a lot of the time about inspiring, especially younger people, but not just younger people, inspiring lots of people who are trying to make a difference. I know Adidas has that kind of quite memorable statement about how sport, you know, can really kind of, I guess, change lives. You know, I like to use that sometimes and just replace it with education. Education is incredibly empowering, and we're lucky to be in this working in this area where we can shout about it and encourage people to take part in education to really empower themselves. So I guess that's one thing. I remind people that often they're working with an audience of thousands or hundreds of thousands of young people. I mean, marketeers would love that. You know, so many marketeers end up working with, I don't know, looking at doing adverts for kitchens and bathrooms and all that kind of stuff. That's not that inspiring, surely, compared to working with hundreds and thousands of young people and their futures. And of course, when we're talking about research and innovation, you know, some of the stories and some of the impacts universities have, and we saw in the pandemic, like, you know, creating the vaccines, some of this coming out of universities, that's an incredible, powerful story. And again, I just remind people that, you know, this is what we're operating with. You know, it's top stuff. And I think it's for the whole sector, really, to embrace that a little bit more and, you know, keep telling ourselves that, you know, we've got a really good story to tell.
You mentioned young people in that, and I think that is a really, how do you avoid, or what's your advice on avoiding just trying to be trendy and the latest thing that's going on, and really engage that youth audience before you just jump in and go, well, I've seen this on TikTok, it's for us, because brands would kill to have access to literally thousands of young people who've already chosen your institution. Do you think universities need to work with young people more to kind of help shape their campaigns?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're going to see much, much more of it. You know, I think there are quite a lot of universities out there that are getting quite progressive at this. I mean, we work with NTU, Nottingham Trent University, who've picked up a few awards, I think, recently for their content collective. You know, they work with a whole group of students to help do their, not just content for TikTok and Instagram, but they did some brilliant stuff on LinkedIn recently. So I know it's very much kind of developing in the university world, that kind of co-creating with or even just giving license to their own students. So I think that's really kind of quite powerful. And I also know that there are many universities that are deliberately now trying to create space for ideas and innovation. I know I work with Loughborough, who run big ideas sessions and invite speakers in and almost make that space, that headspace for their staff to really come up with things. Maybe we'll see more universities allocating a percentage of budget to innovation. I don't know, but clearly there are still some universities that are, you know, I guess more kind of progressive with things like TikTok than others. And, you know, I have come across the occasional university that will still say to me, well, we're dipping our toe in TikTok to see if it works. And, you know, of course it works. You know, the biggest youth platforms in the world, it works. It's more of a question of how do you work with it? I talk an awful lot with clients about, yes, you really should be in this space, but you've really got to think about how you use it and how you're true to what you're trying to achieve and how you're true to your audience. So when it comes to this maybe slight reluctance to go into certain areas, when I first started out doing this, I used the term disco dad quite a bit, dad dancers and things. I'm over that now, because actually I think we all have to overcome that. The bottom line is actually TikTok is a big mass platform. You know, it's the way that a lot of the world communicate. So, you know, what on earth is wrong with the university completely embracing that and adapting in terms of style to the audience that's inhabiting that kind of space? You don't go in with a dad voice, you know, you get your voice right, you know, and that's why quite often we're using co-creators, we're using students to help us pitch, you know, our messages at the right kind of level. I think there are plenty of universities out there that, you know, we can look to see how they're doing it. And NYU is always really good for seeing how they're using students to embrace, you know, these kind of world of reels. And, you know, absolutely not kind of be corporate disco dancers.
It's just totally working out the tone of voice. And it's like your point there about not using your dad voice, but, you know, you've got thousands of students, and if you pay them to help create content, it's like, it's just a no-brainer.
Yeah, we saw, when talking to vice chancellors, we had, of course, Arts University Bournemouth putting out on TikTok a whole kind of conspiracy theory, I suppose, around their vice chancellor being Banksy.
I love that.
They pitched it just right, didn't they? They used the channel just right. They told the story in a way that it worked for TikTok. And then when they invited their vice chancellor to come in and talk about it, it fitted. It wasn't a disco dad thing at all. It was the vice chancellor who was proving how human he was to actually come in and comment on it. And, you know, it created a huge amount of engagement. And I also think it opened the doors to the institution and showed it as a really kind of human, welcoming, on the ball kind of place to be. And the other thing is, of course, is our influencers, you know, and I think the whole world is waking up now to the fact that the celebrity influencers aren't necessarily the best way forward. And if you look at the cosmetic brands world, for example, they are very big now on finding the expert influencers. You know, people that might not have quite as much following, but they're dermatologists. You know, they're people with some real kind of voice on Instagram and in places like that. And, you know, who's got the expert voices out there? Well, universities are packed full of people that are experts. And if we're starting to trust the expert voice more and more in places like Instagram and TikTok with brands, you know, consumer brand stuff, surely we'll do it when it comes to education, research and more.
What brands or universities do you think do a really good job at getting it right with younger audiences?
Well, I've mentioned a few. I can be careful with trying to single out, especially UK universities, because of my clients. I don't want to get into trouble. We're really into looking in the US and Australia, New Zealand and places. You know, Monash has been a real inspiration for us recently. I was lucky enough to be in Melbourne when they did an installation there involving virtual reality, all sorts of different techniques to really engage with, especially younger audiences, about what the future could look like. So, you know, they've been a big inspiration. Also in Australia, UNSW, I think what they do is really cool. Wollongong, you know, one of the best course finders that you'll ever come across. I think in America, you know, stuff like Arizona State University and their whole world of wonder. You've got NYU, I mentioned. Miami Ad School, you know, maybe not surprisingly, but that's so cool. I mean, a lot of there's so many things they're doing. And if you want to learn some good CRM techniques, so yeah, but it's not just, you know, the big kind of international recruiting countries. I think, you know, in Spain, IE University is somewhere that is a big go-to for us. ETH in Zurich in Switzerland is a place where we're always finding really good research for videos. And crucially, we're finding really good stuff that is emerging. So they might be new entrants to the sector, like your, you know, UA92, great example. We love a lot of the things they do. You know, the London Interdisciplinary School is interesting. Teddy London, you know, again, something worth looking at. And then what, you know, employers are doing, what big organizations are doing in the world of education. So, yeah, I'm not really singling out any. There's lots of really good ones. But the point is there are lots of good ones. And, you know, that's ultimately what we do is find them, share them, and hopefully inspire people to use them.
Thanks for listening to the Hear It podcast. If you like what you heard, please rate, review and subscribe as it really helps others find us. You can also follow us on Twitter @Hear It Podcast or drop us a message by emailing info@threadandfable.com.